All right. This is the moment of truth, Kenny. You ready?
Yes, yes, I'm ready.
Okay. Let's go, buddy.
Okay, we're live in 5, 4, 3.
Showtime.
Yes, yes, y'all. You know what time it is.
Okay, good.
It's time for Sports Edge. And here's your host,
TC and Jake.
One of our last shows in April, trying to make every one of them count. Saying goodbye to April over the course of this week.
I wish you would have said goodbye to this bit.
Huh?
I wish you would have said goodbye to this bit.
Nah, people like it.
Yeah.
People come up to me on the street every day, say the only reason I listen is I just think it's fun to know what month it is. What kind of chaos would you be in your life if you didn't know what month it is? And this is a podcast that'll tell you.
That's true.
Your live reaction, Darren Waller, Kelsey Plum, calling it quits.
I saw a tweet about this. I don't really know much about her. I know that she went viral for eating popcorn and that she's graded on the WNBA player curve.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's an attractive lady under any circumstance. You disagree?
Yeah, I mean, to each their own, you know?
Yeah.
I do believe calling them a sports power couple is a bit much.
Well, they both play professional sports.
That part is true. Yeah.
How many marriages have both members of the marriage are active participants in leagues that are WNBA or higher?
Well,
like you can't
goalie,
both be 10th division.
The
British
goalie
football.
Wasn't. I don't know that women's soccer domestically is, but she might have been playing overseas too. You know, and she tried to kill him multiple times. Interestingly enough, I believe also a tight end.
Yeah, would you rather have Jeremy Stevens or Darren Waller if you're starting a team?
Yeah, I think Darren Waller, if he's going to meetings.
I feel like Jeremy Stevens, you're erasing him a little bit.
Yeah, well, I feel like you're underrating Darren Waller.
We're going to find it. I mean, tight end played a different role in the game. Oh, boy. Yeah, this ain't helping me.
No, it won't help. Mm-mm. Not
his,
at all.
His career high was 554 yards, which is really underrating his blocking.
That's what you're gonna the pin and pull.
You know, it's a big part of the job. It's half of what they're doing.
And especially in that offense.
In that offense.
Yeah.
Boy, yeah, Darren Waller.
A fucking baller, dude.
Taking a step back recently, but that step back still... Last year, still had more, or I guess within, yeah. Last year, one of his worst seasons, still within 2 yards of Jeremy Stevens' career high.
In many fewer games. Mm-hmm. But no, I.
Well, he used to only play 16. You got to give him that.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, he was like the first player that I've ever heard openly talk about like rehab.
Yeah, I mean, he was out of the league for several years, right?
I think he was only out of the league fully for like a year. But, I mean, he has detailed, like when he was in college, that he was just basically fucked up all the time.
On what, does he say?
I think it started with booze and pot, and then he got pretty into pills. I think. I could be wrong about that. Which is a heinous accusation to just throw around.
So his senior year at Georgia Tech was 2014. And then he didn't play a down of NFL football. Oh, no, I'm wrong. He played in 15. It's he goes 15, 16, then, yeah, all of 17, he's gone.
Yeah.
Then comes back with Oakland in 18. On that hard knock season where the absolute apex of the season was Luke Wilson. You remember Luke Wilson, the tight end?
Of course, of course.
Walking up to Darren Waller, and a guy with a neck tattoo, and saying, "You like Ozzy Osbourne?" I just didn't guess Ozzy Osbourne's the best, man. I don't know that Darren Waller and his boys were ever rocking out to Ozzy Osbourne. That's what he kind of told Luke Wilson.
No, but I do recall, though, like once Luke Wilson dropped like a couple bits of knowledge on him, he's like, oh, I know that one.
Yeah. I mean, they were listening to No More Tears
That's
in the
right.
stadium as the conversation was unfolding, which I think that anyone across any spectrum is going to admit that's a banger.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's a for sure banger.
Also, that moment reminded me of a bit that I did one time that it probably was like a C plus B minus bit at best, but I had a lot of fun doing it. And it was with Ahmad Dixon and Terrence Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it with Donovan, and editing it was really, really funny. And Donovan and I will text each other about this from time to time and be like, man, we should have like tried to make that something. Because kids, I hate when people do that. It's very Bill Simmons. But like 10 years ago, if you could get yourself to Cowboys camp as a media member, you actually had like way more time to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't really know what happened. It was already like a circus, right? You know, you already had Romo and then even into like the first couple years of Dak. But like when they were coming off the field, nobody really like fucked with you at all. Like you could just go find a guy if you wanted to go find a guy. Like you have the sheet, blue jerseys, white jerseys, positions, numbers, college, whatever. And I would do a little bit of research during the day and be like, all right, I'm going to go pinpoint this guy. And of course, I knew Ahmad Dixon from insanity in Waco. Legal and illegal.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, well, what, you know, I want to get him with Terrence Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that we
would also
have
went
them,
to Baylor.
That's also true. Yes. The idea was that I would have them. Donovan was with me. I believe at this point it was probably an iPod, not a phone.
Mm-hmm.
And play them songs and see if they could guess name of song, artist, or just like know some of the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And
you think that if you'd push that a little harder, that it might be you and Jimmy Fallon's spot right now?
It's possible, yeah. But they had a lot of fun with it. And the thing that I remember the most about it, that they enjoyed it, the reason they enjoyed it the most was because of Guitar Hero.
Oh, nice, yeah. Yeah, if you are playing a lot of Guitar Hero, you're going to be
Which everybody who was like smoking pot in college in 2012 was.
I guess. I don't know. I know that you never looked favorably upon anyone ever saying anything. Yeah, and most of the time I don't agree with your harumph stances, but I'll go with you all the way on this one. Guitar Hero people fucking suck.
No, I mean, I'm very Randy Marsh on this yeah. particular issue. But yeah, they were like, hey, bro, I know that one from Guitar Hero. And I believe they guessed that Lynyrd Skynyrd was Nirvana, or Nirvana was Lynyrd Skynyrd. But it was,
I like that.
It was either Sweet Home Alabama confused with Smells Like Teen Spirit or vice versa.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Kurt's got a real reputation as a chill guy who just kind of everything rolls off him. But I think that would have gotten under his skin.
I think you're probably right.
They were representing different ideological poles at the time. Not that they were contemporary artists, which is another layer of the fun. They're about 20 years apart.
Minimum?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
but, you know, just all that fucking honky shit.
That's all it was.
Yeah.
That's all it was every single, like, you know, guitar-based song we played. They're like, is this the Rolling Stones
stuff my history teacher listened to,
right, with a guy with a ponytail,
yeah,
who my coach had to convince to bump me to a 70.
yeah
but they had fun with it though, and they were like, you know, when we got done they were both walking off laughing talking about it, and then you mix the audio together and you're like, hey, I got a good C plus bit here. So what happened to non-competes?
Yeah, that's the other live bit that we can react to. Lena Khan. You know who Lena Khan is?
I do now.
You do now, okay. I've always got, I don't know if you can see behind me, my big board of all the top Biden administration employees. Just always changing that, you know, as as events happen. Just that my favorite of all the Biden administration employees, Lena Khan, way up there. In fact, I don't even really know who's competing for second. Not that press secretary. I don't know her name, but I feel like she's not killing it.
It's been a bad run for the press secretary.
I thought you loved Jen Psaki.
Since her.
I thought it's just been the same lady since then. Am I wrong?
I thought they were on the second one since then. But to be honest with you, my Jen Psaki point, Psaki, don't know how to say it. Time and time again, this has been mischaracterized and misconstrued by the mainstream
Psaki
media.
Point is that you would throw it all away in 1 second if you could.
My point all along,
which is insane,
was that that is a level of attractiveness and intellect that you would be fine with your daughter having. And you guys respond, and you guys, I won't name names, but you're one of them. But many of you said, yeah, that was never in question.
It's unfortunate for you that all of this was recorded. I could play the segment back and Hey, I only recognize the move you're doing because I do it every goddamn day of my life. You say something that's broad that you can't defend, and then when challenged, retreat into a much narrower.
Narrow.
Yeah, your classic Martin Bailey. I know it. I live it. But that means I can see easily whenever someone else is doing it. Now,
I think she's an attractive woman.
I want to be respectful about this. I don't want to say anything that makes it weird, but if she and your wife were both actresses in Hollywood and they went out for 100 of the same parts, I believe that your wife would have 100 acting gigs and Jen Psaki would have 0. So,
she'd have my heart.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's a weird, that's a weird one to pick. But anyways, she's not on my big board. I had to take her off my big board because she doesn't work for the administration anymore. I'm sure she's fucking chilling for Exxon or whatever the fuck. What's she doing?
I mean, I know for a while she was with MSNBC, which is basically like working for the administration. Am I right?
You are right. Yeah, yeah. No. She's on MSNBC.
Yeah.
Which is way up there in terms of least soul-crushing thing done by Democratic administration operative. Like, the rest of them are explaining why people like me, Lyft employees, shouldn't be able to eat. Things of this nature.
Yeah, and when the other ones bail, they're just like, I'll just go on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, that's fun.
It's just, it's consistently way more fun over there.
Yeah, Jen Psaki, it's not like she's turning down Dancing with the Stars. They're not calling.
Bite your tongue.
I've made enough points about her appearance. I'm just saying the people of the Biden administration are not national celebrities in the way. Like, it's funny because it's all the resistance moms that are talking about them constantly that make them so that, like, Sean Spicer is a name that can go on Dancing with the Stars. Like, everyone hated him so much. Like, no one hates. I have the strongest feelings about Jen Psaki of anyone, and I don't hate her.
Right.
I just think you're crazy. So she's just not a name. I mean, I see that she's got 1.4 million Twitter followers. That seems low, right? I bet Sean Spicer has more than that. Although, it's gone downhill since then. Boy, no, he doesn't. He's a million behind. Oh, Sean.
Bro, him and the Mooch were just banging on Cameo.
Yeah, I have no doubt that they were.
I'm pretty sure I have one.
He's the host of the Sean Spicer Show. The Sean Spicer Show's account itself has 666 followers, which is sad.
Yes.
Dumbzone's got more than that, right?
Yeah, I would hope so. Yeah.
I'm getting a call from a telemarketer. Anyways, Lena Khan, good employee of the Biden administration, head of the Federal Trade Commission, and they voted narrowly today to ban nearly all non-competes. They had 26,000 comments. I should have read this article before starting to talk about it. Now I'm trying to talk about it and read it at the same time. You give us some reaction, some analysis while I read this article.
Yeah, I don't really have any like specific analysis or reaction.
You don't have any takes on non-competes? Jesus Christ, dude.
Other than it was pretty obvious that it was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it was obvious to you.
Yeah, I might have a source, I suppose.
Well, no, I'm just saying like it was obvious to me too. There was fucking plenty of, like, Brunig's not like talking to Lena Khan himself. He's reading the same publicly available articles that we can.
I suppose when I say source, I would say just somebody who understands all this at a level that I'm not sure that anybody else does. Now, also,
I'm just saying it's a bit silly that the opposition's lawyers didn't read those articles that were publicly available too.
Well, I mean, to give them the benefit of the doubt, there's going to be a shit ton of lawsuits about this. Like, this is going to be this will be a Supreme Court issue.
Maybe.
I think it probably will be, because there will be a ton of different lawsuits seeking to block it. Then it'll go to appeals. It'll go to different circuits. It'll keep going up and up and up and up. And one of the things that is most interesting to me about it, and, you know, to an extent, I experienced this firsthand, you know, the judge in our particular litigation, she was, if I'm not incorrect, a Trump appointee.
Mm-hmm.
Also a fantastic person, and I would love to buy her dinner and her family if they ever.
Even though she wouldn't take a picture with you.
She deemed that unprofessional, and in hindsight, I also agree with her. but I would still love the picture one day for the family.
Mm-hmm.
But almost like the NCAA, it does seem to be an issue that in many cases has the rare bipartisan appeal.
Now, the vote went 3-2 on party lines.
It went 3-2 on party lines with the Federal Trade Commission. But my guess is once this does get to the Supreme Court, I don't think it'll be 9-0 like NIL was.
Yes.
But I don't think you're going to be able to count on the same 6-3 type split.
It's a weird issue because you would think that the Republican justices are going to be very pro-business, and the businesses do pretty strongly coalesce around we like non-competes, but it's not clear to me that that's necessarily logical or serving their interests, because the other people trying to hire the people away with the non-competes are also
business owners. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No. And I mean, you've talked about this for months now, as far as like Silicon Valley and how that how they outpaced Boston and the MIT scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like I said, I don't think it'll be like a clean sweep, but I do think that in general, especially when you're trying to compete on a global stage economically, and I've kind of receded from knowing about the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that America, in an attempt to stay competitive, probably needs to examine some of these types of measures. And I don't know. I mean, dude, it's not actually crazy to think. I would say if we would have just pressed on and on and on and on and on, it might have been like a 5% chance. But there at one point was like a 5% chance that we would have ended up in front of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was not a 0% chance, I can tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of, you know, yeah, 5%'s right.
But that takes years.
Yeah, and I think how did you feel about it, I guess I should ask? Did you want to go in front of the Supreme Court or not?
No.
Is that how your lawyers felt?
Well, I had a bunch of different lawyers.
Oh, and some of them liked it, some didn't. Yeah, that makes sense. I know who's on what side, and you know which side I'm on, dude. Fucking
yeah, yeah.
Swing big. If you are into the Supreme Court thing, like, you're going to get more than one Washington Post article, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, for sure. But
although I think that ended, I mean, I'm not, I don't want to say anything that could be construed as negative, but I think you, it's not like that caused the big pop, did it?
For policy or for subscriptions?
The Washington Post article did not lead millions of libs to read the Washington Post like they love and say, I got to go out and subscribe to these guys.
You know, well, no, I don't think that that occurred. But I do think that it was just another like piece in this coalescing puzzle of, wait, what?
Yeah.
So, you know.
You ultimately got the outcome you wanted, you know, like. Yeah, so every part of the strategy is then, I'm not saying it was bad or anything, you know, I'm just.
Well, I mean,
I'm just saying if you were part of the Supreme Court case, it's not like that's necessarily a guarantee that your subscriber base would double.
No. And I mean, it was also pretty clear that there could have been a great deal of like stop start in the interim.
Yeah.
Like that, because we were actually like producing a product that they were seeking injunction to stop, as opposed to somebody who was just like, I left this company and now I would like to sue them.
Yeah.
Our business operation could have been, all right, you can do it for 3 months. Okay. You can't do it for 3 months. You can do it for 4 months. You can't do it for 6 months.
Yeah.
Like as they just like unspooled that entire situation. And that was just something that I was not particularly interested in, and really independent of the cost.
Yeah, it's just an annoying way to live.
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that was the main thing to me, was like, all right, if we can go and win in December, then I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're telling me that after that's done, that is like step one of 10, and even those who wanted to hit the gas, it might be 20.
No, I think it's, as far as like court date, or court cases, I think there's just appeals and then Supreme, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, along those paths, you might have to go do like a 2-day deposition, and then you might have to have another hearing. Yeah. Like there could be 4 or 5 things that are packed into the same bucket of thing two.
You'd only see 3 judges or 3 sets of judges.
That is correct.
Yeah,
that is correct. But
yeah, no, I just, you know, I remember whenever I was just trying to update my thinking there, because I remember before the Washington Post article came out, I at least handicapped that was going to be a bigger deal. So I'm just saying I was wrong about that. And so the analysis I made back then of Supreme Court would be great because it would get your name out there more. I should probably, you know, modify that somewhat. Maybe it wouldn't be as great for you as I thought it would. I'm just ready to admit when I'm wrong.
As always.
Yeah.
As always.
Rigorous.
No, I mean, certainly we're not the reason that this happened.
No, it's a bit separate
track. The tweets are funny. It was already happening.
Which I would say is something to factor in about your likelihood of reaching the Supreme Court. It's like this is an entirely separate matter. Like the NLRB has the power to say what is and is not in employment agreements, but then also the FTC in an entirely different set of authorities can also say, you know, like, you know, the NLRB is like between employers and employees, the relationship. And then the FTC is just like all trade, you know? So like the rules between businesses, and it's a thing that's at the nexus of both, but like, you know, your case has nothing to do. The FCC process had started before yours did. It had nothing to do with yours as it was going along, and now it's finished.
I think our thought was that, and this happens a lot of times, right? Like with test balloon cases and stuff like that, was that ours had like a level of high profile, quote unquote, if you want to call it that, that might have been the one that we could have actually, in the event that it got to that, that would have been one that the court would have, you know, taken up or whatever. But I don't know. I'm just glad it's over. And in general, I do think they're pretty shitty. You know, I do have friends who have worked for literal food places that had non-competes, and they were not like containing Colonel Sanders' secret recipes in like a Tupperware that they hid in their trunk.
I have a distant relative, not non-blood, or, you know, it's not that distant, but it's not blood. I have a non-blood relative who recently tried to go. He's essentially a receptionist at a dog grooming place. And he tried to go to another dog grooming place. And they said, you have a 2-year non-compete, you son.
It's fucking insane. A buddy of ours, dude. A buddy of ours who listens to this podcast. I can't remember if it was pizza or something else, but he was like, yeah. In my 20s, they made me sign like an 18-month non-compete, and it was like a chain pizza restaurant.
Yeah, when I worked at Domino's, we were next door to a Pizza Hut, and I was always thinking about hopping over there.
Sure.
You know, kind of seeing what, you know, if they could do a dollar more an hour. I know the area like the back of my hand.
Of course.
If you're trying to...
Don't even need a MapQuest.
Yeah, if you're trying to deliver pizzas in Southern Denton, I got that locked up. The Teasley location, shout out.
I used to order from there quite a bit.
It's a nice little place.
But in general, yeah, I mean, it's, I feel like it's cool. I feel like if we in any small way were a part of it, then, you know, I think we at least got people in our small nexus, like thinking about it. I mean, I even remember talking to like my mom about it, you know, because my mom has been a small business owner basically since she got out of high school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's been burned by this before where people would take like the exact product that she was making and like leave and then go try to sell it for themselves. And I'm like,
golden chick situation.
Exactly. And I'm like, that's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, that's
stealing your idea.
Exactly.
You can't, like, you're not allowed to steal business secrets.
Yeah. And so whenever I first tried to explain this to my parents, you know, they were kind of like, well, we've kind of been burned by this. I'm like, that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, and yes, of course, like at some level, a place that you worked before did in some way contribute to whatever level of hireability you have going forward. But if that's the only standard, then nobody's ever going to be able to work anywhere else.
Yeah, and it doesn't cut the other way, you know.
Like ever.
Whenever I took over the top 10, I don't want to say who I took it over from, but I improved a lot of the processes considerably by moving from a physical piece of paper to a spreadsheet that was online based. And I think that I don't know how many millions that made the company. It's hard for me to estimate, but obviously it had an impact. And whenever I leave, it's not like they're paying me residuals from that, you know?
Sure.
Well, if you're there, the point I'm making is if you're there, it's cutting both ways. Who's contributing what? And so they could be like, you know, well, your resume was really bolstered by having that top 10 credit on there. And Lord knows that's true. I don't know how many millions that's made me. So, you know, what I'm saying, it's just, it's fair play, you know, on both sides.
Sure.
That's my point.
Yeah.
I've been reading some Am I the Assholes that I thought were worth commenting on. I've been bedeviled because I'll read just a bunch of them at one time and they just kind of all wash over me. And then it's interesting which ones I'm still thinking about 5 days later, but by then I can't find them back in my history. So I wish I had some of these in front of me, but I don't. But one that I just thought was a classically fun time. It was, lady with a young kid, you can imagine the situation. The kid needs a diaper change, and she goes into the restroom. There's just one diaper changing station. This is a real suboptimal setup. We've all seen it before. They put the diaper changing station inside the handicap bathroom.
Mm.
So the handicap stall, only play to access. The diaper changing station is in there. And the kid's having a fit. There's shit in its pants, you know? Bad scene. But someone's using the handicap stall. So she waits for 5 minutes. Then finally the person's coming out of the stall, and you know what happens next. Lady wheels up.
Yeah.
In her chair.
Mm-hmm.
Says, hey, that's mine. And I don't think it's too much of a conundrum. I feel like it's clear to me that the lady who's been waiting, like the facilities, like I know it's got a picture that kind of looks like you on the door, ma'am. However, we both need to use this thing. It's not like there's a non-handicap changing table she could go to. She already would have. She has the same need for the services I have a real hard time, other than, well, look, my picture's right there on the door, imagining what argument you could even make that there's some kind of justification that the person who's been waiting less time should get to use the facility first. But I don't know where you fall on it. It's just funny to imagine. Any situation where you're arguing with a handicapped person over who has the right to the handicapped stall is very funny. And if you can find one where it seems like the person that's like, all right, back up wheels, is in the right, it's pretty tasty.
Yeah. And it's especially tough when there is actually a chair.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
if
I
it was
definitely,
just Josh.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I go to park at places, store, restaurant, whatever, if I see someone parked in a handicapped parking spot, even if they have the placard or the license plate and they don't appear impeded in any way by said handicap, I'll give them the
what the fuck?
Eh.
This despite being
a little bit of that.
Childhood friends with the edge case that I've always thought of. That your friend who's anemic does get the handicap.
Yeah, that's tough.
Wait, is anemic? It's the one where you can't bleed. Hemophiliac. They're a hemophiliac. That's a different blood disease. I apologize.
You
have a friend who's a hemophiliac that gets
the handicap. Yeah, you punch him and it turns black.
Yeah, but how does that relate? Like...
Well, I will tell you this. If he has to walk for like a long time, he bruises.
Really? Okay. Yeah. All right. That's good to know. I thought it was just if he gets cut, he can't stop bleeding.
No, it's not just that. Like impact affects his body. But that is the politics of narcissism, because I know that because I know him. Mm-hmm. Had I not known him and I saw him parking in front of Red Lobster, I probably would have given him a...
Which we may only be able to do for so much longer here.
That's right. Yeah. Endless shrimp has wrecked our biz model.
That was it was during Lent that my parents decided, during my sophomore year, there was a brief period where we discussed, frankly, the idea of me leaving Excel.
And I remember.
I thought that was kind of a train rolling down the tracks. Then they called a meeting whenever the headmasters got word of this. They said, nah, I bet we could get... probably at least another 100,000 out of these people.
Insane.
Which is one well-placed meeting. And turns out I was wrong and they were right. And after the meeting was done, they had to break the news of the meeting to me. And it was Lent. So you can't go to any regular restaurant. So it was sitting in a Red Lobster that I was told. The next 2 years of my life.
I just hate that you had Red Lobster ruined for you in that manner.
It is all I think about.
That's now. Very tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Those biscuits.
Anyways, you can buy them at the store, you know.
I'm well fucking aware. You ready for this?
This is the dumbest thing I've ever said.
You want to know what life is like over here? You probably think, you know, I got two houses. Who's got it better than me? My wife has a dish that she made last night that it's a chicken pot pie with the biscuit mix as the pot pie.
That's incredible.
I'm just eating half a rack of that.
That's incredible.
It's my time. Then the other Am I the Asshole that I really wish I had the details. It was so fucking good. Because most of them, it's like clearly the author is in the right and they just want other
people.
Who
was the author of the last one? The parent or the handicapable person?
The parent.
Okay.
And so, like, it's stuff like that where, like, obviously you're right, dude. You just came here so that everyone would tell you that the person who gave you shit was a dickhead. And they were, but, like, do you have to be so small that you need other people on the internet to tell you about it? But whatever. The fun ones are the ones where they're doing that same thing, but they're so blind. They're so dumb about, like, what's happening.
The entire comment section is like, yes, you are.
Yeah. And the details are important here. And I think I can certainly give you the picture, but like they were so rich. I wish I had them. It was a mom who she was like, isn't my daughter a giant dickhead? And it was, shouldn't I be able to live a little? I just got out of a bad marriage and I'm having a good time and my kid's being a real fucking Debbie Downer about it. And the lady was being like, she'd been a housewife for her entire life, which is like, where it's the skeleton key to the rest of it, of like, this is how she doesn't know how the world works. But she got a settlement that it was like, I don't know, $80,000, something like that. Like, certainly an amount of money that like you can't spend it today. But then it was like it included the equity of the house, you know. And then it was all the alimony period. So like she's getting this lump sum, might have been 80, might have been 200. Those are the two numbers sticking out in my head. But like even if it's 200, like that's not enough for the rest of your life. And she doesn't have any skills. Like she's,
or at least any like never.
The resume is like, I haven't done anything in the traditional employment setting for 30 years.
Yeah,
and I've got to make it by with this 200. And she spent like a quarter of it on a European vacation. Like she's going to like fucking shopping sprees where like her and her daughter are like going down Rodeo Drive, like just fucking living it up. And she's like, my daughter says to slow down, but I'm like, I had to suffer in that marriage. It was very hard. Your dad's a fucking dickhead. And don't you guys think that she's just being a little bit of a wet blanket? And everyone in the comment section can just see that this lady's on a collision course with being homeless.
Yeah, it's very Goodfellas, right?
What happened in Goodfellas? It's been like a while since I've seen it.
The don't buy anything?
Yeah.
Just keep your head down just for a little bit. The heat will cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm so uncomfortable. I had friends like this in high school. I'm so uncomfortable in scenarios where kids kind of have to parent their parents.
Yeah.
Like we have friends that you know where they kind of had to like be the responsible one. Sometimes even to the point of like kind of raising their siblings.
Yeah, definitely happens.
Because it's like, hey, I got a divorce. So now I'm just like, why? Well, I mean, I'm going to go out.
I'm done doing the wife stuff.
Yeah.
And so honestly, I kind of grouped the mother stuff in with that. So I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Or the dad stuff, whatever, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I've seen that happen multiple times and it always just make me so uncomfortable. But it's not uncommon.
No, it pops up in the, you've got a couple different, I guess there's probably like 20 versions of Am I the Asshole that you just see over and over. And one of them certainly is, my parents have made me the more or less the mother of my 6-year-old sibling. And I don't want any fucking thing to do with any of it anymore, but am I being a dick to the sibling? Or, you know, some of them even think like they owe something to their parents. It's just like, no, I don't believe that children owe anything to their parents. As a father, I would never come back and be like, well, I paid the rent. Like, you had the decision to have a kid, you know? This is your obligation.
Yeah, no, that's definitely like
a deeper... You don't owe someone when they meet their obligations.
I don't necessarily feel like I owe my parents anything, but...
If you like them and want to see them succeed, like I love my parents. And so if there were a situation where they were going to lose their house and I could stop it, I would. But that would be a favor I'm doing them because I love them. It's not something I owe to them.
Yeah. And this is probably like delving into 10 minutes here that's going to feel like therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But It has always been a little bit striking to me that I would listen to, in particular, I would say one of my parents talk about their upbringing. And I'm like, man, that sounds like it sucks. Like, it seems like that had like a negative impact on you and the way that you process information now. And then as I've gotten older and tried to explain to that person, man, I'm not like mad at you, but I do feel like some of the way that I was raised has had a negative impact on me and the way that I process information. And they're like, that is what?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. Like, that, it's just what you were saying.
Yeah.
It's just the thing you
were saying. No, because whenever I was saying, we were talking about someone else who wasn't me.
Yeah. And so I fight that battle probably more often than I would like to. But it does come up where I'm just like, no, I mean, I'm not blaming you. I'm not mad at you. I just want you to understand that the same stuff that you were feeling that I understood, that was not unique to just you.
Yeah. I mean, good on you. Like, you should, I think it's fucking great that you've created a space where you can say that. It's further great that you're not saying it in an accusatory, angry way. Like, you know, I don't know. Because
I
shouldn't be angry about it, and you also shouldn't be like a total pushover, you know, like.
Yeah. And I think that's instructive for everyone. And I've said to, I've probably said this to you before, when we've had like conflicts or whatever. I feel like one of the things that I have somewhat going for me, it's small consolation for your spouse. But one of the things that I have going for me is I am very well aware that most of my problems are my fault.
Yeah.
Like some of them, yes, obviously there's like maybe a 20, 25, 30% like interplay between, you know, nurture and nature, whatever. But it would become frustrating to me when you deal with people in your family or your friend group that are like, actually, I think all of my problems are your fault and all of your problems also your fault.
Yeah.
That I feel like
doesn't add up.
A bit of a dead end.
Logically inconsistent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been reading more of the oil book. Would you like to hear some more about oil?
I can't believe you haven't finished it.
It's a very long book. I'm not even halfway through.
I do recall you saying it was very long.
And I can't keep up the pace, you know? Like, I got to take breaks from it. So, they're going through the beginnings of the oil business in Saudi Arabia. Like, you know, they first found oil in Iran, then in Iraq. But there's still the general, like, establishment view is that, like, yes, there's oil here, but it doesn't mean that, like, across the entire Middle East, there's just oil everywhere. That's just fucking sand, dude. And if you buy a concession there, you're just going to own a bunch of fucking sand. And there was an interesting, the guy, so it ended up being the Standard Oil Company of New York, of California, Standard Oil California, that got the concession. And the people that would become British Petroleum were also vying for it and ultimately decided they just didn't want to spend what Standard Oil California did, so they didn't. And then whenever it hit big, they were like, oh, well, then we'll take a concession. And they got another one, and then that just was fucking sand, you know? Like, so it does happen that you think there's going to be a bunch of oil, and then it ends up not being any. It's not like the entire Middle East, there's oil under the entire thing. But there's a lot of pockets of it. And so whenever
you end up meeting Prince Bandar.
Yeah. No Prince Bandar without all the things that I'm about to tell you.
Sure.
So the king of Saudi Arabia, Ibn Saud, that's where the rest of it comes from. He's the one that like united the various warring factions and created what we now know as Saudi Arabia. He had an advisor. Just a British guy that was kind of antagonistic towards Britain. Like the Britain, I get the sense that Britain is being run by a bunch of dudes that made fun of him in school. And so he's like, well, you know, I am the kind of person who can be an international playboy. But if any of my international playboying comes up against them, then fuck them. I don't care that I'm from Britain. Like those guys fucking blow. And so he sort of steers the contract to Standard Oil of California rather than British Petroleum, because the British Petroleum are the guys he doesn't necessarily like. And he's very much got the ear of Ibn Saud, and he's just very instrumental in suggesting to Saud that oil is the way to solve his problems. Like he's got a real money crunch. All of the guys in the Middle East were having a money crunch. I don't remember if Saudi Arabia was affected by this specifically, but a major part of Kuwait allowing concessions in was that their economy had previously rested a good bit on pearl diving. And then a guy in Japan found out how to artificially make pearls and they were fucked. Like, it's just the way the world, like, all this stuff, you know, like, we wouldn't have Middle East oil in the same way that we think of it unless a guy in Japan hadn't invented artificial pearls. Just, you know, it's a sentence that's true, but it's fucking crazy.
I wonder if that has any, if there are any sort of effects, like, with, because aren't, like, artificial diamonds really popular now?
I don't know. I hear ads for them and stuff. About them.
Yeah, and people are like, hey, they look exactly the same, and you don't have to, like, have your hand cut off.
Yeah.
I wonder if that has, like, any sort of political reverberations that are similar.
Oh, I'm sure it does.
Diamond's not near as big of a deal as oil, obviously, but...
Yeah. But, you know, the African economy, I'm sure, is being shaped by the technology of artificial diamonds. And, you know, it seems like it's improving, right? Like the idea of an artificial diamond has existed our entire lives, but my impression is the quality of them is much higher than whenever we were born, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I wonder how many, like, if there's a Juneteenth element to it, just like they get down into the depths of the mine and they're like, dude, you guys can come up. We can make it.
I doubt that's specifically how it happens, but yeah, it's a funny thought. Like they rush to the surface with this giant diamond. They're like, oh no, fucking see, world this market one? Changed.
Bigger.
Toss it back.
That's not funny.
But so this guy, I don't know if Saudi Arabia is specifically affected by the pearl diving crunch or if it's just Kuwait, but, Saudi Arabia has definitely got a crunch. They're, you know, the government's not going to be able to pay out as much as it needs to. And, so there's this British guy that's like, hey man, if you opened it up to oil exploration, you could get a lot of cash right now, fast. And ultimately that wins the day. And so, that guy just, it's not like he had to do some convincing. It wasn't immediately apparent to the rest of the royal court that this was the direction to go in. So absent his intervention, I think that it's fair to say that you probably wait a couple more decades before the Middle Eastern oil craze happens. And that guy's a big dude in history. And his name's John Philby. He's the father of Kim Philby, who would also go on to be very important in that he was one of the largest Soviet spies in British intelligence during the Cold War.
Hell yeah.
Kim Philby was a big fucking problem for everyone in the West. American intelligence, he was very close with Jim Angleton. This is... The movie The Good Shepherd is not a documentary. They change all the names. But it's one of the major plot points of The Good Shepherd is Jim Angleton's relationship with Kim Philby. Of like, you know, that they're both just like, they're in the circle, you know? Like, what Jim Angleton's the CIA's first, like, head of counterintelligence. So his job is to figure out who people like Kim Philby are and stop them. And he's just like, but not my buddy Kim. We don't have to do the all the procedures and shit for him. It's Kim. And Kim Philby specifically, I think in like 1955, was accused and investigated of being a Soviet spy, and then cleared, and then just continued being a Soviet spy until I think it was 1961.
Nothing to see.
He left for Moscow and didn't come back because the heat was getting hot again.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so his dad, the father of oil exploration in Saudi Arabia. And then
it's all connected, TC.
The final thing I'll say, I guess for the podcast in general, probably, but certainly about the oil book, is it's been very striking to me. So the book, I think there's been a couple revisions and things like that, but it was released in 1994, something like that. It certainly wasn't like rewritten from the ground up after that. And I don't remember exactly what the world was like in 1994, but it felt to me like the tone that we use when discussing oil companies has ratcheted up considerably since then. I remember hearing a lot about the ozone layer and acid rain in 1994, but the specific idea that the world is getting hotter and it's the fault of fossil fuels feels like something that we've come up with in my lifetime. And I watched a Frontline documentary about the way that the oil companies have shaped that, and it's very good and very convincing. And so from that, I know that they knew in the 70s and 80s what they were doing. And there was really, it's pretty nuts of like there was a change at the CEO level. Like they switched from one CEO to the other. And the new guy was like, the old guy kind of was saying the best thing for us is to admit all of this and get out in front of it. To have the, like, to employ top scientists to understand how climate change works, and then to react in our business and pivot away from the kinds of things that are going to have bad impacts on the environment. That was what one of the CEOs of Shell thought. I don't think it was Shell. It was Exxon, I think. But, you know, one of them. And then they switched CEOs, and the next guy was like, that's fucking stupid. Just lie. Just lie and sell as much oil as we possibly can. And that's what carried the day and, you know, what they did from then on. But the book was written in the middle of the let's lie about everything period, at a time whenever the let's lie about everything was going great. Just fucking gangbusters. So I was very interested to see how people thought of oil then. And then also, you know, like he's writing about the attitudes that people have in the fucking 1800s. When certainly there's no conception of climate change whatsoever. I don't even think that we were keeping track of the temperatures at the time that the fucking you know, oil exploration starts. And so I thought that it would kind of be like a snapshot of how everyone is like, boy, I love all these oil companies, and that this would be very funny to me now that we hate all the oil companies. And it's interesting that that's not at all what's going on. Everyone hates the oil companies the entire time. Like Ida Tarbell, who you surely learned about in school at some point, you know, the queen of the muckraking journalists, that her whole thing is like, you know, bring down Rockefeller and Standard Oil. And like all of the like progressive crusading is against things like Standard Oil. And it's interesting to see that like these attitudes are still there, even though the climate change stuff isn't. I think it was just, as best I can understand it, like it was just always seen as a way that people could make a lot of money. And so the kinds of people, like the way that we think of like finance people nowadays, you know, like any skepticism you have about finance bros in New York, your Martin Shkreli types of just like, greed is bad. People who are greedy in a way that like sets aside all other concerns that they ought to be having, those people are inevitably going to do evil because they're not worried about whether or not they do evil. And so anyone who's involved in like these greed-based industries should be viewed with suspicion. This was a place that oil held because it was very fucking useful. You know, like it was awesome that like we can see at night now. Whenever we couldn't before. everyone likes that. But that was never enough to overcome the sense that people, who, like I said, you know, just the folks that aren't worried about doing evil, so inevitably they will, are populating this industry. So we do need to keep an eye on them and view their trade with derision. I don't know. I always thought that we didn't like the oil companies because of the global warming stuff. And the global warming stuff turns out to just be the latest iteration of suspicion that has always existed since the start of the industry.
It probably applies to several different industries.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that that is the one that has driven the world economy for so long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you could make more money doing something else, then
exactly.
it would take that spot. But
yeah,
this is the way you can make a fucking shit ton of money.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. So anyways, what do you got going on?
Not much. Not too much. I got both kids tonight.
Ooh, I'm geared that's up. Fun.
Yeah.
You got any activity? What's the strategy? How are we going to succeed in this assignment?
Well, it's interesting because we try to not do any tablet during the week.
Boy, that's good for you.
There are like, I would say it ends up being like one afternoon a week.
Okay.
Like if childcare falls through or something. But the main thing is just the time where I'm in putting him down and she's out. You know, like what do I do then?
Yeah.
She knows how to unlock doors.
Yeah, yeah.
Like she knows how to get outside if she wants to.
Does she want to?
Not really, but like, you know, maybe she wants to go out back and a good listener of ours some many moons ago recommended to us, like, and if you don't have one of these, you need one. The bubble machine is just fucking undefeated.
Yeah, do enjoy bubble machines.
Yeah, like you don't have to dip it 1,000 times. Turn that shit on. And
but if she goes back and turns on the bubble machine, no big.
Right? I just don't want her outside when I'm inside.
Is it like an enclosed? I haven't been to your new.
I mean, it's a backyard. I mean, I suppose it's enclosed, but I don't know. I just that freaks me out. But that like 20-minute period is the one that really, really tests me.
Yeah.
They're probably both going to go to school smelling tomorrow because I'm not sure I'm up for a dual bath tonight.
Yeah, the Izzy very good in general at like anytime you're trying to make like a logical argument to her, I'm just always so impressed by the move. It's such a good move. I use it so often in my life of just like abandoning all values in order to win the argument. You know, like she'll just like we'll be like, hey, well, if you don't shower, you're gonna be stinky. She's like,
I don't care.
I want to be stinky. I'd prefer to be stinky. This is a fucking plus for me. Turn that around.
I don't know if Nora learned it from her, but I've heard, I don't care if my friends don't care if I'm stinky.
And then she sees it coming down the track. So whenever we just say shower, she's like, I want to stink.
Mom, I want to stink.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, fortunately the Mavericks don't play until 9. So I'm not going to be like stressing out about that.
That's a big factor for you. That's good.
It is.
It's a nice little treat.
It is a treat, a little carrot at the end, but it ain't easy.
I guess I probably shouldn't even say how this thought entered my brain because it's just going to detract. You're going to get distracted. But Iglesias was making a great point that whenever he was I just have seen this in my own life that I was prepared. I was very upset that I wasn't given more independence as a child. And looking back, I think that I was right on the merits. And so I was all ready, you know, whenever I had kids to, well, you know, if you want me to prove out the whole thing, I can. I was just ready to, part of the reason why we moved down here is just now, like if Izzy wants to walk to Trader Joe's, I don't, 5 seems a bit young, but like we're getting close to a time where I'm fine with it. Certainly, if she had a lot of desire to do it, I would show her the right way and, you know, get her trained up on it. And, you know, if you just want to go grab a banana, no big deal. You think I'd have to, like, talk to the manager? Just be like, hey, I'm fine with it.
I think you're about 5 years away from that being an option.
Yeah, maybe. But my point is that I think that all that's the life I wanted as a kid. So I just assumed that was a universal desire, and I was wrong. She is very disinclined for any situation where she doesn't have a parent nearby.
Yeah.
She wants a parent nearby at all times. So she would never wander out into a backyard. The problem would be trying to get her to stop knocking on the door of Carter's room or, you know, whatever.
100%, yes. I was the same way as a kid. Very near where I grew up until about the age of 12, they built a video update and a grocery store. All I wanted to do was just me and one of the homies go rent something, go get some punch straws, go into Tom Thumb.
That's paradise.
Fuck yeah. But no, my kid cannot be alone, you know, for more than 5 minutes without being like, Dad, I got to tell you something.
Yeah, that's at the heart of
it. It's the same shit you told me 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, but I did want to tell you again. I felt the recurrence of the desire, so here we are.
Yeah, you've made up a new character with a one-syllable different name, but the story is exactly the same as it was.
It was a different name. This one's new. It's the heart of the ongoing disaster that is her sleeping situation.
Yeah.
The idea of being in a room, like
either conscious or not, for 8 hours by yourself? No, absolutely not. Not going to happen. No fucking chance. So, yeah.
Yeah. But again, you push two beds together back here, buddy.
Yeah, that probably is the solution.
You don't even notice.
I think we got enough width in the room to handle two queen beds together.
Just go wall to wall.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
That's nice.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Cool.
Later.
That's it for tonight. The high school special is next. So until tomorrow, for everyone who's been a part of this one,
I'm TC and Jake.
We do thank you for watching. Good night.